triplets who have been staying this week. There are two boys and a girl, and they're super sweet, all dressed in little Scandinavian stripy tops. Dad, meanwhile, is in his Farmer Mick outfit. He's taken to wearing a bright check shirt with a straw hat, and he practically says, "Ooh-ar," every other sentence. He's walking along, juggling three bean bags very badly, but the children don't care. "Who wants to ride in the pickup?" he asks, and the children all shout excitedly, "Me! Me!" "Who wants to see Agnes, the cow?" "Me!" It's not Agnes, the cow. It's Agnes, the bantam hen. But I'm not going to correct him. I mean, whatever. "Who's having the best holiday of their life?" he winks at me. "Me!" The children's shouts are deafening. "Let's sing our song now." Dad launches into a lusty tune. "Anster Farm, Anster Farm, best place to be. Anster Farm, Anster Farm, never want to leave. Who wants a Somerset toffee?"
"Me!"
Honestly, he's like some sort of children's party entertainer. And he's not stupid. Every other minute he tells the children they're having the best holiday of their lives. It's basically brainwashing. All the little ones leave the place actually weeping because they're going to miss Farmer Mick, and we've had a load of rebookings already. What with him amusing the children, and Biddy making pots of jam the whole time, plus all the grown-up pursuits too, I do worry they're going to burn out. But every time I say that to Dad or Biddy, they just laugh and come up with some new idea, like offering hay baling lessons. During the week, we've got a whole activity program called Somerset Skills. There's willow weaving, woodcraft, foraging, and the guests love it. So, basically, the glamping site has started off as a roaring success. But whether they can make an actual profit... Sometimes, just the thought of how much money Biddy's thrown into this venture gives me a gnawing feeling inside. She won't tell me exactly how much she's invested, but it's a lot. And that's money that could have been put aside for her old age. Anyway, there's no point fretting about it. All I can do is help them turn this place into a profitable business, which means, for starters, that Farmer Mick has to stop doling out free Somerset toffees because, one, he goes through boxes a day. Two, he eats half of them himself. Three, one of the parents has already complained about her child being given evil, sugary treats. The parents of the triplets appear from their yurt, followed by Steve Logan, who's carrying their luggage for them. Steve helps us out on Saturdays, which are our turnaround days. And although he's incredibly annoying, he's also annoyingly useful. His hands are so huge, he can shift about three holdalls at once, and he always puts on this ridiculous deferential air in the hope of tips.
"You mind how you go, sir?" he's saying now as he loads their SUV. "You look after yourselves now, sir. You have a safe trip now, lovely family. You should be very proud. We'll miss you."
"We'll miss you," exclaims the mum, who is in a stripy top just like her children and clutching the lavender cushion she made yesterday. "We'll miss all of you, Farmer Mick and Biddy and Katie. You're an angel." She seizes me in a sudden hug, and I hug her back because they are a lovely family, and I know she means it. I'm Katie here to everyone. Of course I am. I'd never even try to be Kat. Not only am I Katie, but I'm a version of Katie even I don't quite recognize sometimes. My London accent has gone. No point trying to sound urban here. It was always a bit of a strain, and the glampers don't want to hear London. They want to hear Somerset, thick, creamy Somerset, the way I was brought up. My bangs have gone too. The hairstyle was so bloody needy, and it never felt like me. It's not even feasible now that I'm not straightening my hair every day. I'm giving it a rest from heat treatments, which means the sleek chignon is gone, and I'm back to my trademark Katie Brenner natural curls, tumbling down my back, tousled by the breeze. Nor am I bothering with flicky liquid eyeliner and three coats of mascara these days, and I've put my city glasses away in a drawer. You couldn't exactly say I have a look anymore, but I'm so busy, I don't care. My face is fuller too, all those delicious dinners, and tanned from the sun. A dusting of freckles has even appeared on my nose. I don't look like me. Well, maybe I look like a different me.
"What a beautiful family," intones Steve, as the triplets climb into the SUV. Family of little angels they are. Little angels from heaven. I shoot a furious glare at Steve. He's totally overdoing it, and if he's not careful, they'll think he's mocking them. But the mum's eyes glow even more, and the dad feels in his pocket.
Ah, now, here you are. Many thanks.
He hands Steve a note, and I roll my eyes. It'll only encourage him. Steve practically bows as the doors clunk shut, and we all wave as the car heads off down the drive. That's the last family of the week. All the yurts are now vacated. There's a short silence between us all, as though we're contemplating this momentous fact. Then Billy turns to me, claps her hands together in a businesslike way, and says, "Right!" And it begins. The thing about turnaround day is, it's fine, as long as you don't stop even for a moment. Biddy and I grab our cleaning things from the pantry and tackle the first two yurts. After half an hour, Denise from the village arrives, and I breathe a sigh of relief. I'm never totally sure that Denise is going to turn up. While Denise takes over the cleaning, Biddy and I move on to preparing and styling the yurts. Fresh flowers in vases, fresh supplies in the hamper. Fresh soap, fresh lavender sprigs, fresh "Welcome to Anster's Farm" card on the bed. Each one handwritten. To Nick, Susie, Ivo and Archie. To James and Rita. To Chloe and Henry. Chloe and Henry are James's and Rita's children, but they're teenagers, so they're in their own yurt. We don't often get teens, and I hope there's enough for them to do. To Giles, Cleo, Harrison, Harley and Hamish, plus Gus the dog. This week is half term. In fact, last week was half term too. The school seems to be picking different weeks this year because there's an extra bank holiday this Friday, which is great for us, double the bookings. So we're crammed full of families, with cots and trundle beds everywhere. As I'm laying out blankets, I quickly check on my phone. Harley's a girl. Right, some of these trendy names, you really can't be sure. To Dominic and Poppy, divorced dad with his daughter. He mentioned that twice while he was booking over the phone. He said he wanted quality time with his little girl, and his ex keeps her too cooped up, in his opinion. And she needed more outdoor play, and he didn't agree with a lot of his ex's decisions. You could hear his pain. It was sad. The glampers often do phone up, even though you can do it all online. They'll say it was to check some detail, but I think they want to be sure that the place really does exist, and we don't sound like axe murderers before they put down a deposit, which, you know, fair enough. To Gerald and Nina. Gerald and Nina are the grandparents of one of the families. I love it when multi-generational families come to stay. Finally, all the yurts are ready. Biddy's laying up tea in the kitchen. We always offer this when the glampers arrive. Good, hearty pots of tea, with her own scones and Anster's Farm jam, available to buy. Our kitchen really isn't up to much. The cupboards are crummy MDF and the counters are Formica. It's not like the rustic kitchens you find in London, with their argers and larders and sickly hewn oak surfaces from plain English. But we do have original flagstones, and we spread a linen cloth on the table and hang bunting everywhere, and, well, it does. I'm walking back to the kitchen when Dad falls into step beside me.
"All set," he says.
"Yes, it's looking good," I grin at him and touch the scarf round his neck. "Nice bandana, Farmer Mick. Oh, and I meant to tell you, the shower's got a special mention in one of the feedback forms. It said, 'Very good for a glamping venue.'"
"They're very good for any venue," retorts Dad in a mock grumbly voice. But I can tell he's pleased. "That reminds me," he adds lightly. "I saw something might interest you. Howell's Mill, down in Little Blandon. It's been converted into flats."
I stare at him, puzzled. This seems a total non sequitur.
"Nice bathrooms," clarifies Dad, seeing that I look blank. "Power showers."
Okay, I'm still not with him. What do power showers in Little Blandon have to do with me?
"Just in case you were looking," Dad continues. "We could help you with a deposit, maybe. The prices aren't bad."
And then suddenly I get it. He's suggesting I buy a property in Somerset. "Dad, I barely know how to answer. How can I even begin?"
"Dad, you know I'm heading back to London.
Well, I know that's your plan, but plans change, don't they? He shoots me a sidelong, slightly shifty glance. Worthwhile knowing what your options are, at least, isn't it?
But, Dad, I come to a standstill, the breeze lifting my hair. I don't know how many times I can say, I want to live in London. I feel like I'm bashing my head against a wall. There's quiet, except for the distant sound of cows. The sky is light and blue above us, but I feel weighed down with guilt.
Katie, love. Dad's face crumples with concern. I feel like we've been getting you back these last months. You're not so thin, not so anxious. That girl up there, that's not you.
I know he means well, but right now his words are pressing all my sore spots. I've been trying to bolster my confidence so desperately all these weeks, telling myself this job loss is only a blip. But maybe Dad's hit the nail on the head. Maybe that girl's not me. Maybe I can't cut it in London. Maybe I should leave it for other people. A little voice inside me is already protesting. Don't give up. It's only been 3 months. You can still do it. But it's hard. When every recruitment officer and headhunter seems to have the opposite opinion. I better get on, I say at last. Somehow I manage a half smile. Then I turn and head toward the farmhouse. I'm just double-checking what activities we have lined up for tomorrow when Denise appears at the kitchen door holding a large plastic crate. It's what she uses for picking up what she calls them glamper's crap.
All done, she says. Been round the site. All spotless.
Great, thanks, Denise, I say. You're a star. And she is, in a way. She doesn't always turn up, but when she does, she's very thorough. She's 10 years older than me and has 3 daughters, and you can see them being marched to school in the mornings with the tightest plaits I've ever seen. The things them people leave behind, she nods at the crate. Did they leave a real mess? I say sympathetically. It's always a surprise to me how nice families and tasteful outfits from Bowdoin can be so messy and inconsiderate. One lot wouldn't stop feeding Colin, the alpaca, all kinds of dumb stuff, however much we told them not to. You'll never guess. Denise's eyes are flashing with a kind of dark triumph. Look at this! She pulls a rampant rabbit out of her crate, and I gasp. No! No! What's that? Biddy looks round from the cooker. Is it a toy? Damn, Denise. I do not want to have to explain to my stepmother what a rampant rabbit is. It's a thing, I say hurriedly. Denise, put it away. Which yurt was it in? Dunno, she says, with an unconcerned shrug. Denise, I clasp my head. We've been over this. You have to label the lost property. Then we can send it on to the guests.
You sending that through the post?
Denise gives a short laugh. Well, I hesitate. Dunno. Maybe not.
Or this,
she brandishes a tube of cream labelled for persistent genital warts.
Oh, God,
I make a face.
Really?
Nice top, though. She plucks a purple T-shirt from the crate and holds it up against herself.
Can I have this?
No! Let's have a look. I peer into the crate and she's right. It's full. There's a water pistol, a pair of children's wellies, a bundle of papers, a baseball cap. God, they've been messy this time. My phone rings and I answer. Answers Farm, how may I help?
Oh, hello. It's the voluble voice of the mum in the stripy top.
Katie, is that you?
Yes. Is this...
Shit, what's her name? I've forgotten already.
Barbara, we're on our way back, about 20 minutes away. We left behind...
Her voice descends into crackles. The signal is so bad on the local roads, I'm amazed she got through at all.
Barbara?
I raise my voice.
Hello?
Barbara, can you hear me?
Very sensitive.
Her voice suddenly comes down the line again in a buzz of static.
I'm sure you found it. You can imagine how I feel.
Oh, my God. Did Barbara leave behind the rampant rabbit? I clap a hand over my mouth so I don't laugh. Barbara with her clean, makeup-free face and her wholesome triplets.
Absolutely mortified. Have to come and get it in person. See you soon.
Her voice disappears. I gape at the silent phone, then look up.
Okay,
I think we have the owner coming back. Did she fess up? Denise gives a short laugh.
I'd lie.
Not exactly. She said it was very sensitive, and she was really embarrassed.
Could be this. Denise holds up the tube of cream.
Oh, shit. The realization hits me. Yes, it totally could. I look from the rampant rabbit to the genital warts cream. What a choice.
You're more likely to come back for a cream, maybe, offers Denise. If it's on prescription, or whatever. But you could get that replaced.
The rampant rabbit's worth more.
I catch Denise's eye, and a wave of sudden hysteria comes over me. This is hideous, my voice is shaking.
Which one are we going to offer her?
Offer her both.
We can't say, here's a vibrator and some genital warts cream, take your pick. I clutch my stomach, unable to stop laughing.
Find out which one it is, says Biddy from the stove. Get her into conversation about it. Then, when you're sure which it is, go and get the item.
Conversation? I double up. What kind of conversation?
I'll do it, says Biddy. Honestly, you girls. And put it in a bag, she adds firmly. Your dad doesn't want to see that kind of thing lying around. And yes, I do know what it is, she adds, catching my eye with a little spark. They've changed the designs. That's all.
Wow.
This is the thing about Biddy. Always full of surprises.
It's only about 10 minutes later that the SUV roars back up the drive. They must have been flooring it. We've decided that Biddy will get Barbara into conversation outside while Denise and I lurk in the kitchen. And the minute we've worked out what the lost property is, we'll come out with it, discreetly wrapped.
Barbara! Biddy steps out of the kitchen door. I'm so sorry you've had to delay your journey.
Oh, it's my own stupid fault,
says Barbara, who has leapt out of the SUV and looks very pink about the cheeks.
But I couldn't relax till I'd retrieved it. A lot of things you wouldn't bother about, but that...
I look at Denise and reach for the rampant rabbit with raised eyebrows. It's sounding like the sex toy.
Of course not, dear, says Biddy in that cozy way she has. Not when it's such a very personal item.
Oh, it's not mine, strictly speaking, says Barbara. It's my husband's.
What? Denise and I stare at each other with wide eyes. Then I take my hand off the rampant rabbit and put it on the genital warts cream. It has to be that, surely.
Although he'd say I get more enjoyment out of it than he does, Barbara says with a friendly smile.
Beside me, Denise explodes.
Stop it,
I whisper, and reach for the rampant rabbit again. I pick up the bag and prepare to head outside, though how I'm going to look Barbara in the eye, I have no idea.
Well, Katie's just fetching it for you, says Biddy. She'll be out with it any moment.
That's right, my voice trembles with suppressed hysteria as I appear on the doorstep.
Here it is. Safe and sound.
I've wrapped the rampant rabbit in brown paper and put it in a carrier bag just so no one gets an untoward glimpse.
Oh, I'm so relieved,
says Barbara as she takes the bag from me.
I expect I left it in the bed or somewhere, did I?
I glance wildly at Biddy, my mouth clamped shut.
I'm not sure, love, says Biddy, totally unfazed. But it seems likely, doesn't it?
I'm so forgetful, adds Barbara with a sigh.
And the book hasn't even been bought yet, so you can imagine how sensitive it is. As I say, I'm mortified. It's so unprofessional to leave a manuscript on holiday.
I've frozen dead.
Manuscript? Book? You've wrapped it up very nicely,
Barbara smiles and starts to poke at the brown paper.
I might just double-check it's the right document.
Shit.
Shit.
Oh, I try to grab the bag back from her.
Let me just unwrap it for you.
I'll do it. She starts pulling the brown paper off, and my stomach lurches as I see a flash of pink plastic.
No trouble,
I say shrilly. Wrenching the bag out of her hands, ignoring her cry of surprise, I dash inside.
Papers,
I gasp, dumping the rampant rabbit on the floor.
It's the papers.
Denise is already one step ahead. She's gathered up all the papers from the crate and shoves them into my hands.
So, here we are.
I hurry back outside and thrust the pages toward Barbara, who looks a little taken aback.
I'm afraid they've got a bit muddled.
Not to worry, Barbara starts leafing through the pages.
Yes, this is it. Again, I'm so embarrassed. It's such sensitive material.
Really, I say weakly. No need to be.
We've seen worse, says Denise, stepping out beside me and giving Barbara a bland smile.
I'm sure.
Barbara hesitates, and I peer at her in surprise. Her pink cheeks are turning deeper crimson.
Actually, as well as the book, I did leave another, item. I think that might have been it. In the bag.
For a frozen moment, no one moves. Then, in an odd, strangled voice, Denise says,
Of course!
She retrieves the rampant rabbit and hands it over. I can't look at Barbara. I can't look anywhere.
Well, enjoy, I say.
Somehow we all keep it together as Barbara gets back into her SUV and zooms off. Then Biddy catches my eye and starts giggling, and that starts me off. And Denise just shakes her head and says, Them glampers. We're all pretty much in hysterics as Dad appears round the corner of the farm and says, Wake up, you lot! There's a car coming up the drive. The first family's here. The next few hours are a blur. It's always the same on a Saturday. A crowd of new faces and names and questions, all to be met with a charming smile.
This is Archie. This is Poppy. This is Hamish. He's allergic to dairy. Didn't we write that on the form? Oh, so sorry.
The families all seem nice enough, and I'm especially keen on Gerald and Nina, who are soon sitting on their deck, mixing gin and tonics and offering them to all the other families. Poppy is already scampering around with her dad, looking at all the animals, while Hamish, Harrison and Harley are glued to their iPads. But I'm not their parents. What do I care? All that concerns me is that everyone is checked in, greeted and sorted, which they all are except the Wiltons. I'm walking among the yurts, checking that everything seems okay, when I notice that Gus the dog has already got into a field of sheep.
Oh, hi, I say, heading over to his owner's yurt.
Knock, knock.
Gus is such a gorgeous dog, only I wonder if you'd mind keeping him this side of the fence. The sheep get a bit freaked.
Oh, of course, says the dad, who I've remembered is called Giles and comes from Hampstead. He's tall and gangling and is holding a copy of a book called The Campfire Gourmet. As he comes out to retrieve Gus, he adds, We're so looking forward to the willow weaving workshop tomorrow.
It should be fun. And if you'd like full English breakfast, just sign up. Unless you're going to make your own.
We're making our own, says Giles resolutely, as he whistles for Gus. On the fire.
Good for you, I say, ruffling Gus's head. Well, I'll catch you later.
As I head back toward the farmhouse, I feel, if not ecstatic exactly, then content. Another turnaround nearly completed. We're getting better at it every week. Denise is catching on to some of our special touches, and Biddy is brimming with ideas and so authentic, absolutely wonderful. A voice stops me in my tracks. It's a ringing, imperious voice, and it sounds just like, no. Marvellous view. Look, Coco, look at this view. And is everything organic? My heart has started to thud. It can't be. Absolutely adore to find some proper West Country cuisine. You'll have to recommend a spot. It can't be, but it is. It's Demeter, here. I feel rooted to the spot between yurts like a paralyzed gazelle. Whoever she's talking to isn't answering loudly enough to be audible. So all I can hear is Demeter's voice, crashing arrogantly through the quiet, asking typical Demeter questions. And is the river organic? And is all the produce local? Now, when you say sustainable, I'm still stranded on the grass. I have to move. I have to get a grip. But I can't. My face is prickling and my breaths feel weak. What is she doing here? Actually, it's Demeter, I hear her saying now, in that smug way she has when she explains her name. Demeter. It's ancient Greek. I suddenly spot Dad coming out of the kitchen. He's holding the master folder, which is where I put all the printouts, guest forms, everything that Dad and Biddy don't want to read on screens. Dad, I gasp, and scuttle over to him, keeping well out of sight. Who are those people? Can I just check? I've already grabbed the folder and am riffling through the paperwork, my hands so shaky that they barely work. Here we are. The Wiltons. My mind is racing. I know her as Demeter Farlow. But maybe that's her maiden name.
Is Wilton her married name?
Is it?
Well, why shouldn't it be? James and Rita, I read.
Rita!
I know, Dad chuckles. Funny name for a woman that age. I thought that when I wrote it down.
So you took the booking? I need every scrap of information. I need to know how this has happened.
She phoned up from her car, Dad nods.
Then his expression changes.
Now don't tell me I didn't put the payment through properly, because I did exactly what you taught me, love.
No, it's not that. It's not that. My head is spinning. I've just seen the address on the form, Stanford Road. It's definitely her. My chest feels so constricted. I'm not sure I can breathe.
Demeter, here. Love,
Dad peers at me.
Katie?
She's not called Rita, okay? I manage. I just heard her saying so. She's called Demeter. Demeter!
Demeter? Dad looks highly dubious. That's not a name. It is a bloody name.
I feel like shaking him. If he'd only written it down right in the first place.
It's Greek. It means goddess of the harvest.
Well, takes all sorts. Demeter.
Dad tries the word out again, wrinkling his nose. Then he surveys me again, looking puzzled.
Love, what's the problem? It's just a name. No harm done.
I stare back silently, my thoughts roaring in my head. I don't even know where to start.
No harm done.
There's no problem, I say at last. I just don't like getting things wrong. We'll need to change all the place names and lists and everything, and explain about the note. It doesn't look professional.
Dad strides off toward the shower barn, whistling a merry tune, and I swivel slowly on the spot.
I can still hear a conversation going on by Demeter's yurt. It must be Biddy who's checking her in, and they're still at it. Go figure. Demeter is exactly the kind of person to monopolize all the attention. Slowly, I edge my way back toward the yurt. As I get near enough to hear, I stop still and listen with all my might.
I read about you in the Guardian piece, of course, Demeter's saying in her lordly way. And I had a brochure. Someone gave it to me. I can't remember who now. And so this is a proper, authentic farm.
Oh, yes, I hear Biddy reply. The Brenner family have farmed this land for over 200 years.
I'm the newcomer.
How fabulous, says Demeter. I'm a great supporter of authentic rural practices. We can't wait to start the activities, can we, Coco?
Coco, that's the daughter. She was Chloe on the form.
Well, I'll leave you to get settled, says Biddy. If there's anything you want, please come up to the farmhouse. I'm always there, or Farmer Mick, or Katie. You haven't met her, but she's Farmer Mick's daughter, my stepdaughter.
Wonderful, says Demeter. Thank you so much.
Oh, one last question. Are the sheets organic? I've heard enough. I back away and sprint into the farmhouse. I don't stop till I get safely into my room. Then I bang the door shut and sit on my bed, staring at the ancient peeling wallpaper, breathing hard. How am I going to survive a week of Demeter? I can't bear it. I have to leave. But I can't. Dad and Biddy need me. Oh, God. I bury my head in my hands. Fucking Demeter. She has to ruin everything. And then a terrifying thought hits me. The minute Demeter recognizes me, it's all going to come out. Dad and Biddy will find out I got let go from my job. That the sabbatical was a lie. They'll get all worried. It'll be awful. I'm sitting motionless on my bed, hugging a cushion, my brain working frantically. This is serious. I have to protect myself. Top priority. Demeter must not realize who I am. She only knew me as Cat. If she associates me with anywhere, it's Birmingham. She wouldn't think of me as Katie, the farmer's daughter from Somerset. And she's never been great at recognizing people. Could I fool her? Can I? Slowly I stand up and head over to my battered old wardrobe. There's an oval full-length mirror on it, and I survey myself critically. My curly hair is different. My clothes are different. My name's different. My face isn't that different, but she's not good with faces. My accent's different, I realize. I can play up the Somerset burr even more. In sudden inspiration, I grab for an eyeshadow palette that Biddy gave me for Christmas a few years ago. I bypass all the neutral shades and head straight for the frosted blue and purple. I daub both colours around my eyes. Then I put on a baseball cap I got years ago from the Bath and West show and survey myself again. I look about as unlike Cat as it's possible to look.
"Hello there," I say to my reflection. "I be Katie Brenner. Farm this land all my life. Never been a Lunnon town."
There's only one way I'm going to find out whether this disguise works. Try it out. As I enter the kitchen, Biddy is sitting labelling jam, and she gapes at me in surprise.
"Goodness, Katie, that makeup's very new look," I say briefly, pouring out glasses of lemonade and arranging them on a tray. "Thought I might give the new family some lemonade, since they miss tea."
As I head down over the field toward Demeter's yurt, I feel sick with jitters, but I force myself to keep going, head down one foot in front of the other. As I get near, I slow down to a halt and raise my eyes. There she is, Demeter, in the flesh.
I actually feel a shiver as I see her.
She's sitting on the deck, all alone, wearing the perfect, glossy magazine version of country clothes, slouchy trousers in a slubby grey linen, together with a colourless shirt and some Moroccan-looking leather slippers.
"No, not Babington House this time," she's saying on her mobile. "Anster's Farm. Yes, it's very new. Didn't you see the write-up in The Guardian?"
She sounds totally smug. Well, of course she does. She's found the latest new thing.
"Yes, artisan activities. A real taste of farm life. You know how passionate I am about organic food."
"Absolutely. Simple things, local food, local crafts."
"Oh, yes, we all take part." Demeter listens for a moment. "Mindfulness, that's exactly what I said to James. These old-fashioned skills, so good for the children."
"I know," she nods vigorously. "Back to the earth, absolutely. And the people are so quaint. Absolute salt of the earth." Something inside me has started to boil. Quaint. Quaint!
"Must go. I have no idea where my family have got to." Demeter gives a bark of laughter.
"I know. Absolutely. Well, I'll keep you posted. Ciao." She rings off, scrolls through her phone, taps her fingers agitatedly a few times, and thrusts a hand through her hair. She seems a bit hyper, probably overexcited at being an early adopter yet again. Eventually, she puts her phone in her pocket and looks around with a sweeping gaze.
"Oh, hello," she says as she notices me.
My chest tightens, but somehow I stay outwardly calm.
"Hello there," I greet her in my broadest West Country accent. "Welcome to Anster's Farm. I'm Katie, the farmer's daughter. Lived here all my life," I add for good measure.
Am I overdoing it? I'm just so desperate to put her off the scent.
"I bought you some lemonade," I add. "It's homemade. Organic, of course."
"Oh, lovely," says Demeter,
whose eyes lit up at the word organic.
"Can you bring it up here?"
As I step up to the deck, my hands are shaking. Surely she'll recognize me. Surely she'll peer under my cap and say, "Wait a minute." But she doesn't.
"So, Katie, I have a question."
She breaks off as her phone buzzes.
"Sorry, just a sec. Hi, Adrian."
She gives a short, resigned laugh.
"No, don't worry. What else are Saturdays for?"
"Yes, just got here. And I've seen the email from Rosa."
I'm prickling all over. It's as if I've whooshed back to the office. Rosa, Adrian, names I haven't heard in months. If I close my eyes, I'm there, sitting at my desk, listening to the office buzz, the tapping of keyboards, the squeak of Sarah's chair on the floor. And now I'm remembering that last day, Flora telling me Demeter was in trouble. Something about Sensequo and a deadline. Well, clearly she got herself out of trouble pretty quickly. Flora's voice rings again in my mind.
"If you're shagging one of the partners, you're never in that much trouble, right?"
"Okay. Well, that's good news," Demeter's saying.
"Can you tell the team on Monday? God knows they need the morale boost."
"Yes."
"Yep."
She's striding around the deck now, the way she does in the office when she's giving one of her rants.
"I know. The cow welfare concept was brilliant."
I can't remember whose idea that was now. My eyes open in shock. Cow welfare. That was my idea. Doesn't she remember? As I watch her pacing around, completely oblivious to me, a wave of anguish crests over me. That was my idea. My future. My life. Okay, it wasn't a farrow and ball, everything perfect life.
but it was my London life, and now it's been shattered. And the worst thing is, it didn't count for anything. She doesn't remember me at all. There I was, worried about being recognised. What a joke. Just for an instant, I want to pour lemonade over her head, but instead I stand perfectly still like a wooden dummy, holding the tray, watching her finish the conversation and put away her phone. Now, she turns her attention to me. Why don't you put that lemonade down here? I want to ask you about these activities. She picks up our activities sheet from the table and jabs at it with a manicured nail. I have an allergy to willow, and I see that the activity tomorrow is willow weaving. I'm also mushroom intolerant, so I can't do the foraging activity on Tuesday either. I want to laugh or explode. An allergy to willow. Only Demeter. I see. Well, all the activities are optional, so... Yes, but if I don't weave willow, what will I do? Demeter fixes me with gimlet eyes. Are there substitute activities? Obviously, I've paid for willow weaving and mushroom foraging, so I feel there should be some other option available to me. That's what I feel. Something rustic. Or maybe yoga. Do you offer yoga? God, she's a pushy cow. I'll sort out an alternative for you, I say in my best customer service manner. I'll find you some bespoke activities. The word bespoke works wonders, just as I knew it would. Oh, something bespoke would be wonderful. Demeter reaches for a glass of lemonade. Well, she says, smiling now that she's got everyone running after her. It's very beautiful here. Very calm. I'm sure we'll have a wonderful, relaxing time. As I walk back to the farmhouse, I'm a whirl of conflicting emotion. She didn't recognize me.
She looked right at me, but she still didn't recognize me.
That's good. I'll be safe. My secret won't come out. It's all good. Oh, but God, I can't bear her. How do I stay polite all week? How do I do this? There's a burning sense of injustice inside me that I can't quell. I could flood her yurt. Easy, tonight. Go out with a flashlight, drag the hose along. No. No, Katie, stop it. With a supreme effort, I shut down the stream of revenge fantasies which has started pouring through my mind. Demeter is probably the most influential guest we've ever had. I can't have her going back to London and telling everyone Anister's farm is crap. We have to give her and her family a good time. Oh, but... I sit down on a wooden stump, staring morosely at the picturesque view. I need to get my mood in order before I go inside. Otherwise, Biddy will pick up on it. After a while, Steve comes into view, and in spite of myself, I smile. He has earphones in and is walking along with a rolling gait, doing weird dance moves with his arms. I recognize those moves from the fifth form dance. Maybe he's practicing his wedding dance. Oh, God, he probably is. I clap a hand over my mouth briefly, then regain control. Hey, Steve, I wave hard to get his attention, and he comes over, pulling out his earphones. Listen, I might need some extra help tomorrow. One of the guests wants a bespoke activity.
Bespoke? Steve makes a face. What's that, then?
Dunno, I sigh. I'll have to make something up. She can't do the willow weaving because she's allergic.
Which guest? Steve surveys the yurts.
She's in Cowslip. Her name's Demeter.
Demeter?
Steve looks as foxed as Dad did. I know, I shrug. It's ancient Greek. It means goddess of the harvest.
Harvest? Steve thinks for a moment. Well, she can harvest some strawberries if she wants to.
I consider this. Would Demeter be impressed by a strawberry-picking activity? Maybe. It's not very artisan, though, is it? She's all about learning farm skills, or yoga, except we don't do yoga. I squint at him. What are you up to tomorrow? Could you join in whatever you're doing? You know, some genuine farm activity?
I'm muck-spreading. Steve shrugs. She won't want to do that.
Muck-spreading? I can't help a giggle. Oh,
That would be perfect. Hello, Demeter. Welcome to your morning of muck spreading.
Should have done it yesterday, Steve's saying. But your dad, he wanted a couple of fences mended.
He fixes me with one of his reproachful looks.
Now, I'm not blaming those glampers or nothing, but have you seen the stile into Northfield?
I nod absently, only half listening. I'm consumed with an image of Demeter on a muck spreader. Demeter falling off. Demeter covered in muck.
And the litter, Steve's saying. I mean, I know they like having their picnics and all, but...
Or Demeter, rock picking. Demeter hoeing a field by hand. Demeter finally getting some payback. And now an idea is growing inside me. A very bad, wicked idea. An idea that makes me want to hug myself. Because bespoke means I'm in charge. It means I can make her do whatever I damn well like. This is it. At last, I'm going to get even. So Demeter wants rural. She wants a taste of farm life. She wants authentic. Well, she's bloody well going to get it.
Chapter 13. The routine at Anstis Farm is that after breakfast, at about 10 o'clock, we ring a bell and everyone who wants to do activities assembles in the yard. Today, that's all the glampers. And as the families gather, there's a happy hubbub. They look so photogenic. I take a few snaps for the website, and naturally Demeter's family is the most photogenic of all. Demeter is wearing another rural chic combo of cropped linen trousers and tank top. Her daughter, Coco, looks like a model, with cultish legs and teeny denim shorts and long, wafty hair. I expect she's been scouted at Topshop already. In fact, she's probably on next month's cover of Vogue. The son, Hal, looks cool. He has sticking up fair hair, an attractive open face, and doesn't even have any zits. Well, of course he doesn't. No doubt Demeter knows some miracle organic zit cure that's only available to people who live in W12. The husband, James, is lean, with a wry smile and those attractive crow's feet which men of a certain age get. He's talking to the children, and they're roaring with laughter. So obviously they all have a brilliant relationship, as well as great looks and clothes and probably talents and hobbies too. He's in cut-offs and a grey marl T-shirt, and he's wearing these limited edition brown suede sneakers, which I saw once in Style magazine. He's clearly as much an early adopter as Demeter is. As I watch, Coco pushes him playfully on the chest, then nestles her head on his shoulder, while Hal taps at his iPhone, the latest version, of course.
"Good morning," Dad greets the crowd, "and welcome to Anstis Farm."
From nowhere, a cheer materializes. Dad manages to get the glampers to cheer every week, and I have no idea how he does it. I think he must have been a fairground barker in his past life, or a ringmaster at a circus, perhaps.
"We hope you are looking forward to some fun-packed activities today," Dad twinkles at the crowd. "Kiddies, you'll be doing Farmer Mix obstacle course, with prizes for everyone."
Another cheer breaks out, and Dad beams.
"Adults, you'll be on the willow weaving activity with Robin here."
He pushes forward Robin, who is very shy and bearded, and is our local willow weaving expert. He also teaches magical singing, has a small brewery, and keeps ferrets. That's Somerset for you.
"Teenagers, you'll have to decide, weaving or obstacle course. All I'll say is that the weaving doesn't involve homemade fudge."
I can see Coco and Hal frowning and looking at each other, trying to work out whether the obstacle course is unspeakably uncool or the willow weaving is even worse. But I can't get distracted by them. I have to start my Demeter campaign. Even though she didn't recognize me yesterday, I'm not leaving anything to chance. So last night I dyed my curly hair with a blue ombre rinse. I always used to do it for festivals. Plus, I put on sunglasses today. From a distance, I look like a total stranger.
"Good morning!"
I adopt my creamiest accent and head over to Demeter.
"We met yesterday. I'm Katie, and I'll be leading your special bespoke program. It's a mind-body-spirit program, and it aims to refresh, relax, and restore. Are you ready to start?
Absolutely, says Demeter and waves at her family. Bye, guys. Have fun.
Now, you requested yoga, as I remember, I say as we step away from the hubbub. Unfortunately, we don't offer yoga at Anister's farm. Instead, we offer an ancient druid practice, Vidari. It's not unlike yoga, though a little more challenging.
Vidari, echoes Demeter. I've never even heard of that.
Few people have. It's very niche, very ancient, very spiritual. Although I do believe Gwyneth Paltrow practices it.
I can see Demeter's eyes light up. I knew mentioning Gwyneth Paltrow would press her buttons.
So, first of all, we'll be doing a one-to-one Vidari session in one of our open-air spaces. Then we're going to change location and do our special equine de-stress activity. Then lunch, I smile.
That sounds tremendous, says Demeter, who has been listening intently.
Absolutely what I had in mind. The Vidari sounds marvelous. Do I need any equipment?
Just yourself? I smile at her, beatifically.
Just bring yourself. Are you ready?
Demeter is tapping at her phone. Wait a minute, she says absently.
I want to have a look while we've still got signal.
I bet I know what she's doing, and sure enough, a moment later, she raises her head.
Vidari! Here it is! The National Vidari Association, ancient and powerful. Suppleness of body and mind. This sounds amazing. Why haven't I heard of it before?
Because I made it up, I want to reply. Because that website was invented by me and put up by Alan last night in about 5 minutes.
Like I say, I smile at her. It's very niche. Shall we go?
I lead Demeter off through the fields and spread my arms widely as we walk.
As you may know, the West Country is a very spiritual area. There are ley lines everywhere. Ancient stone circles. Stonehenge, chimes in Demeter alertly, in her I'm-so-clever university challenge way.
Exactly, I nod.
Stonehenge being the most famous. Now, here at Anster's farm, we're lucky enough to have an ancient druid circle. You can't see it anymore, but it's there, and it makes the perfect place for us to practice our Vidari.
We're walking through Elm Field now, and a few cows come wandering toward us. They're tan jerseys, and they're sweet-natured, but very curious. I can see Demeter stiffening as they get near. Is she scared?
Do you have any experience of cows? I ask politely.
I'm remembering Demeter in that meeting at work, lecturing us all on the countryside.
Not exactly, Demeter says after a pause. They're quite big, aren't they? What are they doing? She adds in a quivering voice, as a cow comes right up to her, staring with its gorgeous dark eyes. What do they want?
She's actually gone pale. Oh, my God. After all that guff she said in the office, she's frightened of the cows, too. Just like Flora.
Don't worry, I say kindly. Just keep walking. That's it.
We both clamber over a stile, and I lead Demeter into the middle of the 6-acre field. It's a totally nondescript field. It's often used for grazing cattle, so there's dried-up cow poo everywhere, and it's got a tiny copse of oak trees. Other than that, it's nothing special. The view isn't even that good. But as I turn to Demeter, I adopt an expression of reverence.
This is the sacred field, I say. The druids lived and worshipped here, and there are powerful ley lines under the ground. If you concentrate, you can still feel them. You have to be spiritually open, though. Not all our guests can pick up the vibrations.
I'm pressing Demeter's buttons again. No way is she going to fail at anything, including picking up druid vibrations. She closes her eyes, and sure enough, after about 3 seconds, she opens them again and says,
There is a special aura here, isn't there?
You can feel it, I smile.
Excellent. You're going to be a natural. Now you need to get changed into your Vidari gown. You can go into the little wood.
I reach into my Anster's farm jute bag and pull out a sack. I customized it with a neck hole and armholes last night. It's the scratchiest, ugliest garment in the world. But as I hold it out to Demeter, I manage to stay straight-faced.
I won't be wearing the gown, I say, because I'm the ceremony leader. The disciples wear the gowns. I can see Demeter's face falter as she takes the sack, and for an awful moment I think she's going to challenge me. I think Gwyneth Paltrow might sell them on her website, I add casually, if you're interested in taking Vidari further. Right, Demeter's eyes open wide. Wow, it's very authentic, isn't it? She strokes a scratchy Hessian. You can find cheap knockoffs, I say seriously. But this is the real deal. If you're buying a Vidari gown, it must come from the West Country. Now, let's head over to the wood. I nod at the copse. The first part of the ceremony is called beauty. That's followed by truth. And finally, contemplation. I hand her another Anstis Farm jute bag. You can put your clothes in here. Take off your shoes too. I want to burst into giggles as Demeter disappears behind a tree. It's amazing how an otherwise intelligent person can become a credulous fool as soon as you mention the words organic, authentic, and Gwyneth Paltrow. But I don't giggle. I remain in character, gathering mud and twigs from the ground and putting them into a wooden bowl. As Demeter emerges, looking very awkward in the sack, I clamp my lips shut, desperate not to explode. Perfect, I manage at last. Now, as I said, we begin with beauty. The mud in this wood has a special, nourishing quality for the skin. The druids knew that, and so every ceremony began with applying the mud to the face. Mud? Demeter looks at the bowl, and I can see the dismay in her eyes. That mud? Think of it as a druid facial. It's totally natural and organic, with ancient nutrients. I rub the mud between my palms. Look at that. Beautiful. It's not beautiful. It's crappy, smelly mud that I'm sure has a few cowpats mixed into it. Right. Demeter is still eyeing the mud warily. Right. So, does Gwyneth Paltrow do this too? I'm sure she does, I say with a serene smile. And have you seen her complexion? Close your eyes. I almost think Demeter's going to refuse, but then she closes her eyes and I start applying muds to her cheeks. There, I say brightly. Can you feel the natural warming qualities of the mud? I scoop up more mud and smear it all over her face. I smear it in her hair, too, and rub it in. It acts as a hair mask, too, I add. It stimulates growth and prevents hair from turning grey. God, this feels good. I start slapping Demeter's head as I apply mud to her hair, and that feels even better. Slap, slap, slap. That pays her back for making me do her bloody roots. Ow, says Demeter. Just improving your circulation, I say briskly. And now, the bark exfoliant. What? Before she can say anything else, I start rubbing twigs across her face. Inhale, I instruct her. Long, deep breaths. Then you'll gain the benefit from the natural bark aromas. Ow! Says Demeter again. This is doing wonders for your skin, I say. Now another mud mask. This will really penetrate. I slap on another layer of mud, then take a step back and survey Demeter. She looks a sight. The sack is sitting lopsided on her shoulders. Her hair is all matted. Her face is smeared thickly with mud, and as I watch, a small clod falls off. Another laugh is building inside me, but I can't let it out. I mustn't. Very good, I somehow manage to say, straight-faced. Now on to the first active part of the ceremony. We call it truth. Demeter gingerly touches her face and flinches. Have you got some water? She asks. Can I wash this off? Oh, no, I say as though in great surprise. You leave the mud on. Then you get the full benefit. Come on. I lead her out of the copse into the field. I can see Demeter trying to dodge cowpats in her bare feet, and another giggle rises. Oh, God, don't laugh. So, I come to a halt. Stand opposite me. Let us be still for a moment. I put my hands in a yoga-type prayer pose, and Demeter does the same. Now, bend over so your hands are touching the ground. Promptly, Demeter bends to the ground. She's pretty flexible, actually. Very good.
Now, raise your right hand to the sky. This pose is meaning.
Demeter immediately lifts her hand high in the sky.
God, she's a tryhard. I know she's hoping I'll say, wow, you're better than Gwyneth Paltrow, or something.
Excellent. Now, lift your opposite leg to the sky. This pose is knowledge.
Demeter's leg rises a bit more shakily.
Now lift your other leg too, I say. This pose is truth.
What? Demeter raises her head. How can I lift my other leg too?
It's a truth pose, I say with an implacable smile. It strengthens the limbs and the mind.
But it's impossible. No one could do that.
It's an advanced pose, I say with a shrug.
Show me.
I'm not wearing a Vidari gown, I say regretfully, so I'm afraid I can't. But don't worry, you're a beginner. So don't push yourself. We won't try the truth pose today.
This is like a red rag to a bull, just like I knew it would be.
I'm sure I can do it, says Demeter. I'm sure I can. She tries to launch her other leg into the air and falls down into a cowpat.
Shit, she sounds totally hassled. Okay, I'm just not doing this right.
She tries again and falls once more into a different cowpat.
Watch out for the cow manure, I say politely.
Demeter has 5 more attempts at the pose, and each time falls into a cowpat. She's totally smeared with cow shit. Her face is red, and she looks furious.
Enough, I say in a serene voice.
Vidari says, one must not exert oneself beyond the limits of one's age.
Age? Demeter looks livid. I'm not old.
Let us now move on to contemplation. I beckon Demeter to a patch of grass free of cowpats. Lie down, and we will use the ancient druid stones to release your muscles and your mind.
Demeter eyes the ground cautiously, then lies down.
On your front, I explain. With a look of distaste at the mud visible through the grass, Demeter rolls over.
Now, this is the druid version of a hot stone massage, I say.
It's very similar. Except that the stones are not artificially heated. They have only the natural heat of Mother Earth.
I've gathered a few rocks and stones, and I distribute them on Demeter's back.
Now, relax and contemplate, I tell her. Feel the energies of the stones penetrate your body. I will leave you to meditate. Free your mind, I add over my shoulder as I walk away. Feel the ancient aura from the ley lines. The longer you concentrate, the more benefits you will receive.
I walk until I'm out of earshot, then settle down in the grass, leaning against a tree. Despite the sunshine, it's a bit breezy, so I pull my barber around me. Then I get my iPad out of my own jute bag and fire up an old episode of Friends. I watch it, glancing up every so often to check on Demeter. I keep expecting her to get up, but she doesn't. She's sticking it out. She's tougher than I imagined. In fact, I can't help feeling a grudging admiration for her. Finally, Friends is over, and I head back to where she's still lying. God only knows how she's feeling, lying in a cold, breezy field full of cowpats.
I'm now removing the stones. I start taking them all off her back. According to ancient lore, your stresses will be removed along with them.
How is your meditation? I add serenely.
Did you commune with a higher power?
Oh, yes, says Demeter at once. I could definitely feel an aura. Definitely.
As she gets up, I feel a tweak of sympathy for her. Her face is mud-smeared and crumpled from the ground. Her hair is a bird's nest. Her legs and arms are covered in goose flesh. And her teeth are chattering with cold, I suddenly notice.
Shit, I don't want to give her hypothermia.
Have my jacket, I say in alarm, and proffer my knackered old barber.
You look freezing.
It was a very challenging practice. Maybe too challenging.
No thanks, I'm not cold at all.
Demeter gives the jacket a supercilious look. And I didn't find it too challenging. She lifts her chin in that arrogant way she has. I actually found it very stimulating. I have a natural aptitude for these things. At once, any sympathy I was feeling for her vanishes. Why does she have to be such a bloody show-off?
Great, I say politely. Glad it worked for you.
I lead Demeter back across the fields
eyeing her goose flesh as we go. I offer her the jacket twice more, but she refuses it. Crikey, she's stubborn. Now, says Demeter bossily as I'm shutting the gate into Elmfield,